And our last scripture reading is from Psalm 30, and it reads, I will extol you, O God, for you have drawn me up and did not let my foes rejoice over me. O my God, I cried to you for help, and you have healed me. You have brought up my soul from Sheol, restored me to life from among those gone down to the pit. Sing praises to Yahweh, O you God's faithful ones, and give thanks to God's holy name. For God's anger is but for a moment. God's favor is for a lifetime. Weeping may linger for the night, but joy comes with the morning. As for me, I said in my prosperity, I shall never be moved. By your favor, O God, you have established me as a strong mountain. You hid your face, I was dismayed. To you I cried, and to you I made supplication. What profit is there in my death if I go down to the pit? Will the dust praise you? Will it tell of your faithfulness? Hear, O God, and be gracious to me. Be my helper. You have turned my mourning into dancing. You have taken off my sackcloth and clothed me with joy, so that my soul may praise you and not be silent. O my God, I will give thanks to you forever. So a few weeks ago, I was out on the front lawn of our church making sure that our grass was getting watered during those first couple of weeks of August that were really, really dry during that rough heat wave that we had. I set the sprinkler out and set the timer on my phone so I'd know when to turn off the water or move it to another area of the lawn. And then so I went into the foyer area to answer some emails and do some work while all that was happening. And about 10 minutes later, I begin to hear someone giggling. It sounded like a kid somewhere in the vicinity of the building. I couldn't see who it was, but just the sound of laughter put this huge smile on my face. And I went back to answering my emails. But then the laughter became louder and sounded like it was coming from a couple of people. And as I'm getting up to see what's going on, it gets even louder sounding, as if it's becoming quite a crowd, just giggling. Well, when I went outside, I realized what the source of this joy was coming from. There are a lot of daycares in the neighborhood, especially around the church, and they often are traveling down Wisconsin to go to the park. Usually in these neat, very orderly lines, sometimes holding a rope so their teacher can keep them all in order. But on this day, as they were passing the church and rounding the corner there from Sedgwick to Wisconsin, there was the sprinkler waiting for them. And I saw the rope about like 10 feet behind them on the ground. And there were just all these toddlers running into the water that was spraying onto the sidewalk. And this teacher was like, had no match against this sprinkler in the middle of August. So she tried a couple of times to get them all back in line and get back to where they were going, but could not be heard over these shouts of delight and laughter, these kids welling up with joy as they skipped and played in the front yard of our church. I almost joined in with them. Their delight was just so contagious. When joy surprises you like this, it feels like it is such a rare gift, doesn't it? Journalist and podcast host Krista Tippett devoted an entire episode of her popular podcast On Being to the theme of joy. And to begin the episode and frame this theme, she asked a question of the guest that she had welcomed on that episode by asking them, how can we have joy in times like these? And I couldn't tell if her question was rhetorical or more of a statement than a question, or if she really was curious about how we actually go about that. But there are tons of ways that people and industries and even religious traditions have tried to answer that question, how can we have joy in times like these? The beauty industry tells us that if we look a certain way, we'll be happier. Capitalism tells us if we just had a bit more money, we'd feel better. Grind culture convinces us if we just worked ourselves to the bone, we would be fulfilled. Even a couple of years ago, reality television got into the joy-seeking business when organizer extraordinaire Marie Kondo got her own show on Netflix. She went into people's homes to help them find joy by helping them downsize of their possessions. And instead of just deciding to throw things away or keeping them because of their function, she instead had each household meticulously go through each item of their home and ask themselves if it sparked joy. And if it did, they could keep it. If it didn't, then it was thrown out or donated. In the movie Inside Out, which we have been using as a guide for, along with the Psalms for this sermon series, the character of joy would answer Krista Tippett's question by eliminating the emotion of sadness completely. Joy's whole purpose is to keep 11-year-old Riley experiencing life through the lens of joy as much as possible. And so when sadness shows up in Joy's life, Joy is convinced that sadness is actively working against her to ruin Riley's life. Joy deems sadness as her arch nemesis, and that as long as Joy is in charge of Riley, Riley has no room for sadness. Thus being the major conflict of the movie, if you haven't seen it. The Psalms are a perfect reminder to us that much to Joy's chagrin, that life isn't about just one emotion, but instead is a roller coaster of emotions. The entire book is often attributed to King David, but biblical scholars are pretty certain that they were written by many different authors. And I like to think of the Psalms as an anthology of the human experience with emotion. They're less about the word-for-word truth about God and more about a larger truth about how the human spirit experiences the world, relationships with other humans and with God. And so just as there are multiple authors, there are multiple reasons that each psalm is written. Theologian Walter Brueggemann asserts that all the psalms can fall into three different categories. First being the Psalms of Praise, or Psalms of Orientation, as he calls them. These are psalms for when all seems right with the world, and all you can do is praise God and give thanks. And then there are Psalms of Lament, or Disorientation, when the psalmist is crying out for deliverance, for mercy, for answers, sometimes even railing at God for why they are experiencing pain, or loss, or sadness. And then lastly, there are Psalms of Thanksgiving or Reorientation. The writer having come through the other side of those times of lament or disorientation and giving thanks to God for seeing them through. Psalm 30 is a Psalm of Reorientation, somewhat of a flashback psalm where the writer is looking back on the experience with illness and being close to dying, being thrown into the pit of death, as they say it. But now, having been healed, having been rescued from this pit, is now breathing a sigh of relief and singing a song of joy to God for this journey. This feeling of joy has arrived through the journey of grief, of sadness, of depression, of even anger. Joy is not the absence of hard emotions and difficult life experiences, nor is it the antidote to end all sadness. But for the psalmist, joy is a companion. It's a dance partner alongside of all the other emotions. Ross Gay is a poet and an English professor at Indiana University. He was that guest on Krista Tippett's podcast that she hosted about joy, in which she asked him, "How can we have joy in times like these?" And on Ross's 42nd birthday, he decided to take on the daily practice of writing an essay about joy. Every single day, no matter what was going on, he would take on the posture of joy. See the world through that emotion, and even on the bleakest or depressing of days, he committed himself to writing as a daily practice. He inevitably put these essays into a book in which he entitled The Book of Delights. In each one, he writes about what delights him, such as seeing a praying mantis dancing, high fives between strangers, and bringing a tomato seedling through airport security, and what joy that brings. All of these really simple things that may not even catch your attention unless you were looking for them. Now, not every essay is sunshine and rainbows, not every piece is happy, because Gay makes the point in his book that happiness and joy are very different. Happiness is circumstantial and dependent on those outside forces we work so hard to control. It is dependent on the situation we find ourselves in and the variables around us. But joy, while yes, an emotion, is also a posture that we take, a practice we commit ourselves to, an awareness we cultivate. It is recognizing the deep connections that are at work, even in the midst of grief or sadness or suffering. In fact, Gay writes that joy at the heart of it has everything to do with the fact that we're all going to die. He writes from this belief that the universal human experience of sadness and loss is what enables a key aspect of delight and joy, namely the connection that we feel with each other in those experiences. As Gay writes, if you and I know we're in that process of facing mortality, pain, and sadness, there is something that will happen between us. There's some kind of tenderness that might be possible, and that's a joining, a joining. The psalmist writes as a testimony to where this joining has happened in their life, where that tenderness, that connection has been revealed, where the forces of life and death and pain and delight, weeping and joy, all of them are intertwined. This is a psalm of recognition that joy is not only there when the poet is lifted from the pit of death and back to life, or when healing happens, but that joy was what always connected them to God in the first place. But it's really difficult, isn't it, when we're in the middle of that pit, to believe that joy exists for us, or we're worthy of it, or that it will only show up in situations when our situation changes. And at the same time, when everything is going well, or how the psalmist puts it, when we're high up on that mountain, when life is feeling pretty delightful, it's easy to think that we don't need anyone. We don't need that connection, that we don't need God, that we're untethered to any needs at all. Yes, when we're feeling happy and purposeful and strong, that is a part of joy, but it's not all of it. As Ross Gay says, joy is instead about how we attend to the ways that we make each other possible. And if that's the case, friends, that joy is about how we attend to the ways we make each other possible, then joy is abounding. It's everywhere. It's always here for us as a gift. Even in the most unlikely of places, at the top of the mountain and in the pit, in the hospital labor and delivery room and at the graveside, in the new job or in the cardboard box on our desk, in the new relationship and in the breakups, at the other end of the phone line or at the end of our rope, in the weeping and in the dancing. Joy connects us to the universal aspect of being human and that life is a precious gift to be shared. My grandmother used to tell me that joy is contagious. That when we share it, no matter how small it may be, no matter if it is a glimmer of joy or a full-blown joy party on the front lawn with a sprinkler, that we are called to spread it. So this morning I want to invite you, if you feel comfortable, to turn to a neighbor or a group of people, no matter how small your group may be, and share as yourself as a joy vessel. I'm going to give us about 10 minutes to do this, and there are some reflection questions in your bulletin you can start with, but see where joy leads you in conversation. If you'd rather do this type of reflection on your own, that's okay. Just let others know that that's what you'd like to do this morning, but share in the joy that you have brought yourselves this morning. Once Patrick begins to play, that'll be time for us to kind of come back together. So.